Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On October 19th, the Norris Group proudly presented I Survived Real Estate 2012. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and the outlook for real estate in the coming year. Over $77,000 was raised to benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event would not be possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners. Foreclosure Radar, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, the Investors Workshops, Invest Club for Women, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. Learn more about the panel and how to attend at isurvivedrealestate.com.
We are going to start the second half of I Survived Real Estate. And for those of you watching online, if you'd like to make a donation, you can do so by going to I Survived Real Estate. The link's there on the front, as well as the event program. And with that, we'll hand it over to Dad.
Okay, we're ready to get started again. If I didn't come by your table, I want you to know there was a good reason, because if I did, you wouldn't even hear my voice at this point. Last year I did that, and I didn't have a voice at halftime. So if Bill hadn't come up with his wonderful lozenges, we wouldn't have had a second half. So I've tried to conserve my voice this time. Once again, thank you guys for coming. It's been a very special evening, and I'm excited about the information we're getting, and we're about to get more of it. We're going to invite Rick Sharga to come up. Rick is probably the most quoted person in our big scope of real estate industry. He's been being quoted for the last 8 years or so, some with Realty Track, most recently from Carrington. He's executive vice president of Carrington Holdings Company, LLC, and one of my friends in the business. I appreciate him very much. And he has a black belt in Taekwondo, so I have to really behave myself. And then Sean O'Toole from Foreclosure Radar. Yeah. Oh, got quite the following. You've been promoting yourself out there or what? Sean's a good friend of mine, and we have just spent some time in Washington, D.C. He's the owner of Foreclosure Radar. And prior to launching Foreclosure Radar, Sean was a buyer at the Trustee Sales Steps. And prior to that, he was a computer prodigy in high school. Anyway, we're excited to have both of you here. This will be kind of fun. Rick, let's talk about this new world that we are contending with. Let me find my place here. What, if you can describe, what is Carrington's business model, basically? Is that that's not easy to do, is it?
No. How much time do we have? Carrington is involved in just about every aspect of the single-family residential real estate business. The company started as a hedge fund back in 2003, bought a mortgage servicing platform when New Century went bankrupt in 2007. We bought their servicing business, created a property management business after that, a real estate business, a brokerage after that. We're doing mortgage originations now as well. So anywhere from investing in portfolios of loans all the way through selling and maintaining and renting properties, we have a business unit that's involved in it. We have 16 different business units operating under the Carrington family.
Are they all located in California?
The investment group, we have two businesses that manage the investments are in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Okay.
The title business is actually located in Plano, Texas. Everybody else is in Southern California.
Your interest in this space of single-family homes really kind of emerged earlier than most people, it would seem.
Yeah, our CEO had the notion back in 2006. The company invested in pools of subprime loans,
okay,
which, as we all know, performed really, really well. So we had a couple of foreclosures. And the And the business model at the time was foreclose on the property, list it, and then keep discounting it until it cleared. And he had this really, you know, revolutionary thought that maybe we should hang on to some of the properties, rent them for a while, and see how that worked. So that started really back in 06, and we were renting our own portfolio of properties, build out a network of property managers in about 35 states, which allowed us to subsequently start renting out properties on behalf of Fannie Mae. And we've been the largest rental property manager for Fannie in their tenant-in-place and deed-for-lease programs, probably rented out, managed over 15,000 properties in those programs over the last few years.
Do you think that your business model was viewed by some of these people and that have joined you and said, huh? Because this is new. Now, we've not had this size of a player in the single-family arena.
The big shift that we're talking about here is, and this is where you and I reconnected a few months ago, we raised, through our partners at Oaktree, which is another big investment fund, we raised almost $500 million to go out and buy vacant REO properties, convert them into rental units, and hold them for the next 5 to 7 years and manage those properties as rentals for a couple of reasons. One is that rental units nationally are occupied at 97%, which is an all-time record. Rental rates are going up. We have probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 10 million displaced potential homeowners who either don't have a down payment, won't qualify for a loan for several years, despite what you said earlier, or have opted to stay out of the market as buyers for the time being. And our extensive research suggests that most people still prefer to live indoors. So we see, and you know what, we're really doing on a national scale, or trying to do on a national scale, what all of you have been doing individually for years now. We're trying to provide a place for people to live who either can't or don't want to buy a property right now. The big difference is nobody's done it on a broad-based national scale. This is the ultimate mom-and-pop, small investor kind of operation. 12% of rental units nationally are single-family units. Most of them are managed and owned by somebody on a local basis. So we're trying to extend it a little bit more broadly.
When you tell me your exit is, let's say, 5 to 7 years out, is that going to be, it's apparently market-driven, you're looking at the tea leaves and saying now's a good time?
Yeah, our model's a little different from many of the other investors that you've seen out there. There was one that this week announced they're pulling out already. Oxif, who purchased 300 properties up in the Bay Area, amazingly enough, didn't get the returns they'd expected because they overestimated the returns. Who knew?
We're really sorry about that.
I bet you are. Especially the San Jose folks are probably really crying about that right now. But
were they rewarded, though, with price increases?
And they were. And so I saw an article today I thought was hysterical. The headline was, "Investors Learn the Price of Hubris," however you want to pronounce it. And I thought, they didn't learn anything. They just made a healthy profit on the flip.
Just quicker than they thought.
Just quicker than they thought. So our model's a hybrid. We're looking at a relatively low annual return, probably somewhere between 4 and 8% a year, depending on the market, with home price appreciation. So we're very, very selective about, you know, we're looking at the Inland Empire, yes, but we're not looking everywhere in the Inland Empire. We're looking at almost neighborhood level, the way that you guys do. And we're looking at markets we think will appreciate over time. So it is a hybrid model. There are a couple other investors who are out there trying to scale up rapidly, and they're the ones that are kind of screwing up the market a little bit right now. When you see properties selling in Phoenix for 120, 125% of list, it's those guys coming in and flooding the market with cash. They're trying to get it to scale so they can form a REIT and use the REIT to refinance what they just purchased using debt. So their yields automatically go up. And I talked to one of the guys about that at a recent conference, and I said, so let me get this straight. You're knowingly going in overpaying, and you're going to finance this using leverage, which is going to improve your yields. Didn't we just go through this?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, but not on this scale. So I felt better after that.
Now, just to clarify, because a lot of us are not familiar with the REIT format, once that home goes into rental status and becomes part of that REIT, is it going to stay rental?
Yeah, it will stay rental.
Okay.
Well, but not forever. I mean, you can, depending on how you structure the REIT, you can ultimately sell off some of these properties.
Okay.
But you don't sell them off in large groups because you need the cash flow. the cash flows that makes the REIT work. So you need a certain number of these properties in the REIT active at any point in time in order to make this happen. It's funny, people, and this is all new for me coming from RealtyTrack, where I used to count the number of houses in foreclosure. Now I'm dealing with structured financial products, and the SEC comes up and knocks on my door and says, you can't talk about that. But it's a whole different model that we're looking at right now, and very different from an individual investor perspective, very different from what we're looking at doing. We have people talking about securities already. So now they're going to create new security products. And I've been saying to the press, you can't do that because there's no history. There's no track record of performance of nationally scaled single-family rental units and how they're going to perform. What's your vacancy rate? How much are you going to pay for maintenance? What does it cost you to manage properties, you know, 38 properties in a given geography as opposed to 38 rental units in one facility? And there really isn't enough history to accurately gauge this, but I'm sure the rating agencies will come up with something that they stamp AAA, and then it'll all be safe. Well, it always works out like that,
it
right?
It does, yeah. Do you recognize that, if not individually, collectively, you guys are market makers in a certain way?
I have been accused of... That's true. I believe what we're seeing right now from a pricing perspective is, to a certain extent, an investor-driven recovery.
Okay.
But the institutional investors can't take all the credit. We're not buying nearly as many properties as a group as individual investors are as a group. You still got us outnumbered out there. And that's a good thing. But yeah, when you go into a Phoenix, and Phoenix now got oversaturated, so you're seeing everybody run to Atlanta. And now we're starting to hear rumblings about people running to Las Vegas, which is really scary because the demographics, the market conditions are so different in that market than the other markets that it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, look, you've been talking about this all night. There are three different sources for properties that you can purchase. There's new home development, of which there's been virtually none over the last 5 years. There's existing home sales, which are limited because between a quarter and a third of all homeowners are upside down and don't want to or can't sell their property. And then there's distressed properties, which are technically existing homes, but we put them in a different bucket. And Sean can attest, we've seen foreclosure activity slow down to a crawl over the last couple of years. So all three of those are lower than normal. There is a limited amount of inventory available, and at that precise moment in time, Wall Street came in and said, hey, here's $8 billion, go spend it on REO properties.
With great care.
Look, we've only bought a few hundred properties at this point.
Yeah, you really have paced. As a matter of fact, are you wondering what to do with the rest of the money? And I'm sure you're finding something they'll do with it.
We are blessed by having a very patient investment partner who understands our model and our approach. And we've said, no, this is clearly a race the tortoise is going to win. We're not going to go out and overpay. We're not going to go out and underscore on yields. We're going to buy the properties that meet our model. And by the way, in a lot of cases, we're buying these from individual investors. And we're going to be in this for the long term.
What about bulk? I guess one of the misconceptions, and let's talk about that you're buying big pools of property that no one has access to,
mm-hmm.
or big note pools. So which one of those, if any,
you know,
is true?
There's actually a syndicate in South America that puts together these on-the-side bulk deals nobody knows about. We're buying thousands of properties from some guy in Colombia. No. It's Columbia, South Carolina, in case you're checking. No, truth of the matter is I'd like everybody to hear this. There are no bulk sales. That's somebody from the California Association of Realtors over there. There's been so much hue and cry over how bad bulk sales are. Look, I'm not going to argue with anybody in the room. Mathematically, you can't make an argument that suggests that anybody should be selling properties off at bulk discounts right now. You just can't.
Right.
There's been one bulk sale from one of the GSEs through the FHFA. Slightly over 2,000 properties were announced in the sale. It took over a year to execute the sale. Not all of the deals have been done yet, okay? So in a year, we've probably seen almost 1,000 properties move. Okay, we're going to sell somewhere between 4.5 and 5 million properties this year. For anybody to get their knickers in a knot over 1,000 homes over that period of time is just, you know, get a life, guys. You know, you need a better hobby than to worry about this stuff. There's been one major bank that's conducted two bulk sales. Total number of properties included, 600. So there's a lot of discussion about this, but the bottom line is most of the institutional investors are out buying stuff off the MLS. They're buying it from individual or small investors who are selling off their pools at higher prices than what they paid. And in a couple of cases, we're seeing some of the guys starting to go into trustee sales. We've opted not to do that at this point.
Okay.
But there are companies that are going into doing that. There really aren't any bulk sales.
What about note sales?
Note sales are a whole different model. And the reason for doing them and the methodology for how you handle them is very different. We have spent over $1 billion this year buying non-performing loans.
I caught you.
And the bad news for anybody waiting for REOs is that less than 20% of those loans will go to foreclosure.
Because the intent is to
recap. This is one of the few cases in our industry where everybody's interests are aligned. Our investors will actually get the best financial return if we're able to take a non-performing loan and modify it into a performing loan. The second best financial return is if we can convince the borrower, if they don't qualify for a modification or don't want to do a modification, and you'd be surprised how often we have that conversation, to do a short sale or a deed in lieu. So when we've exhausted every other alternative, we go to foreclosure, which is the worst financial return for us. There are some companies who aren't doing much business right now at a different model. It was buy the non-performing loan, immediately foreclose on the borrower, and then try and flip the property. That's not our model. And so, again, over 80% of the properties involved in the note purchases we do either get modified or go out by way of short sale. Of the 20%, now we have another option. We didn't have this option a couple years ago as an industry. But of that 20% that we do wind up foreclosing on, we'll take a look at the ones that might make sense for our rental markets. But you have to understand, when you buy a pool of non-performing loans, you don't get to select exactly which loans and exactly which markets. So not all those properties really fit that business model anyway. But it's a much better resolution for borrowers, for communities, for the housing market, because we're removing a lot of what would be distressed inventory, which keeps prices stabilized and in a lot of cases keeps borrowers in their homes.
And it's really on a scale that we wouldn't be able to participate in anyway, because we would have to see multiple states within a day or two.
And that's the issue. I mean, we're buying properties in states with these pools that we wouldn't normally look at.
Okay.
When it takes you over 1,000 days to execute a foreclosure in New York, as an investor, you don't necessarily want to buy a property in New York. But if it's part of the pool, and it means you're going to get a bunch of properties in California or Texas or somewhere else, that's part of the deal, and you just deal with it.
Somebody's out there going, I think we can get rid of this New York one in this pool with Tarik. It's good.
Not my money.
Sean, you have said long before it really has panned out to be true that you didn't think shadow inventory would end up crushing the market and being showing up in big quantities, but yet that rumor is still alive and well. We're still waiting for it. As a matter of fact, it's imminent, but now it's after the election.
Right. And if not after the election, after the first of the year.
There you go.
Okay. So,
and if not after the first of the year, after Easter.
Okay.
Something.
Damn Easter bunny.
So what quantity, first of all, what do the banks own right now? And is it less than a year before, and is the pace likely to go up or down?
Yeah, so bank-owned inventory right now is around 64,000 units in California. That's about a 30% decline from a year ago. And it's taking the bank still on average about 9 months to sell that inventory, but it's less than 8 months worth of inventory. So I would say there's actually a shortage of REOs, and I think any REO agent can attest to that.
Does it look like the lenders are going to say, okay, well, now we can be aggressive and go after the people that are delinquent? Does that look like their model?
Well, you know, the problem is the model changed in September 2008. You know, when they announced TARP, everybody thought, anybody who's heard me speak before has heard this before, but, you know, everybody thought it was about loans to the banks. And, you know, really what it was about at the end of the day was supporting the mortgage market, buying mortgage-backed securities, but also about not forcing banks to sell these properties at these, quote-unquote, distressed prices. And they just did two things. You know, before September 2008, if a home was 90, 120 days delinquent, depending on the regulatory agency, the bank had to foreclose, right? The regulators enforced that. And you had to move the thing through the process. And they changed the rules at that point in time. It was probably good, given that, you know, we were running out of money to bail out the banks. And, you know, the other thing that they did was just in time for the banks to pass the solvency tests, they changed how banks had to account for these assets. And so instead of having to mark them down to their current market value, they could mark them to a model which, you know, theorized that, you know, most of these would pay off someday and the losses were only 5%. In fact, most of the bank earning reports you've heard since then have been, you know, when you hear positive earnings reports, when you dig into the numbers, it's usually gaming these loan loss reserves, and by lowering the loan loss reserves, they get to report positive earnings. So the bottom line, the game's completely changed. It's not in the bank's best interest to foreclose even move these things through the process.
Just a short answer then on this question. Did you basically... No. No, he did good. No, this is...
I took all of his time. It's my
fault. No, I'm being honest. Did you watch my presentation?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, did you agree or disagree?
You know, I agree, but, you know, one of the things, the chart that you had that showed how much you were saving on payments versus rents was true in Riverside, San Bernardino.
Well, that's all
it
I pointed out.
It wasn't true in Orange County. And I think, you know, we're in different places in different parts of the market. I think Riverside, no question, overcorrected. Uh-huh. And I also think that we now have a yield-driven market, not a comp-driven market.
Yeah. You know, what I think is interesting, and this is what you do have to be aware of as an investor, you have an oversupply of buyers with an FHA-qualifying loan limit. Because that's if what I'm saying is true, they're emerging out of the, you know, they used to own it, they lost it, and now they can get an FHA loan. You have to be sure that that price range is inside that loan limit or the demand's not there. And so in Riverside, you can't say, well, this 900 grand house is going to do really well. Well, no, it doesn't have a lot of buyers because that's not where the bulk of the people are looking. And so that's a concern.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, California Property Solvers, Coldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Elite Auctions, For Investors by Investors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Incorporated, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lievis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, John Reisinger Photography, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Weston South Coast Plaza, and Winning in Tough Times LLC. See isurvivedrealestate.com for the video from the live event.